and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This podcast is brought to you by Pearland EDC. Innovation lives here in Pearland, Texas. From pro-business resources and entrepreneur networks to an educated, diverse workforce, Pearland makes innovation happen. Connect with them at pearlandedc.com. Pearland, innovation lives here. My guest for today is Adrian Stone, founder of Bayou City Startups, an organization that hosts monthly happy hours for Houston founders. Adrian has a very diverse career background, from getting her PhD in teaching AP biology to joining 23andMe in the Bay Area. She shares how passionate about networking she is on the show and her observations on Houston's growing innovation ecosystem. Adrian, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
It's cool to be here. I know you've been one of my favorite people to talk to lately. And we're going to talk all about the happy hour meetups you run, which more people can join and talk to you because it's my favorite pastime, especially since your LinkedIn paints a picture with your career. So I think we have to start there. I mean, you've been a teacher, a White House intern. You got your PhD in translational biology and molecular medicine, which I can't say, let alone comprehend. You worked at 23andMe. And you've been on the founding team of, a company that exited, a company that closed up. So you're just like such a fascinating person to talk about and talk about startups with. So now that I've like hit the highlights of your LinkedIn profile, how do you describe, when you like look back at your career, what's the through line there of your passion and your professional lineage?
So that's a great question. I think I had it described to me once by Gordon that I was a zigzagger like he was. And this is Gordon from Capital Factory. I don't know if your readers have heard of him. He wrote the book Startup Success. I'm looking at it on my bookshelf right now. And I'd say that probably pretty well applies to me. I'd say the through line for me is just following my curiosity. And, you know, so that took me, I was interested in politics. So I did the White House internship. And then I came back and I had this background in science and I wanted to do something with it. So then I went into teaching, and through teaching, I, you know, got interested in web development through doing that, and blogging. And so that's kind of how I made the transitions into like the digital spaces of, you know, building a website. I did consulting work for other academic institutions and building their websites. I did that in grad school. And then that curiosity drove me to go get my PhD, right? I was super interested in genetics. I was like such a dork. I literally brought a genetics textbook to Christmas, like on the road to Christmas vacation one year, and read it cover to cover as human genetics. I just have always been fascinated by it. And, so that's why I did the PhD. Natural segue to 23andMe there, putting that into application. Actually, for me, that was a combination both of the educational background and the science, really getting to take that and make it, you know, consumable to regular people, something I was super passionate about. And then that's kind of how I got into the broader startup ecosystem. That was my first exposure to the official, like, product marketing or product management space. So that kind of led to my, you know, all of my later like startup work that I've been doing. So curiosity, long story short.
that's amazing. I think I kind of resonate with that, because something that I really like about journalism and why it stood out to me as a career from a very young age, like a surprisingly young age, like most kids do not know what they wanted to do. And I was like, I want to be a journalist because no day is different. Like, you're constantly learning different things and the learning doesn't stop. The foundation of writing, of course, is the constant. But so I resonate with that for sure, that following your curiosity. When you think about like the startup world, which now has been a big part of your career since 23andMe, you know, what's drawn you to the world of, I guess, working with startups as a founder, as a founding member of those early stage companies, to also just networking with them with what you're doing with Bayou City Startups?
Yeah. So the Startup space is just like you described with journalism. It's never the same. Every day is different, especially early stage. I've actually found that I gravitate towards the earliest stages. I've, 23andMe is when I worked there, this is pre-IPO, they were still considered a startup, but we had 650 employees. It was a well established machine at that point, and we weren't really doing a ton of really cutting edge stuff across the company in general. Like they were still trying a bunch of different things, like the clinical trials and all of that. But the core product was pretty set, right? Like you spit in the tube, you send it in, you get your reports back. They tell you, you're related to like Red the Viking or whatever, and then also, that crazy family stuff. So, and then your health conditions. So that was startup-ish, but not like the same as later, the earlier stage stuff. Getting in with the early stage, you are literally 0 to 1. Like you're building the plane as you're flying it. You are setting the company culture. You are hiring the people that you're going to work with on a daily basis. You're deciding what that early feature set is. You're talking to customers. You're talking to investors. You're, evangelizing your product. You're trying to build the thing that you put out there. I mean, it's you're doing all the things. And that's a really particular skill set that I have found like isn't necessarily something that the later stage companies even necessarily want. So, it's been definitely for me like, oh, this is the space that I like to work in. And now that I've been saying all of this, I'm not gonna lie, I've totally lost the thread of what the original question was.
Well, I mean, but I think you've still addressed it. It's just, what draws you to the startup world is the question.
Oh.
So I think you got there.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, well, I think it's so interesting because then you've kind of taken this passion and this interest in startups. You've obviously made a career of it, but then you turned it into being, I think, the first and only person to consistently provide like a networking opportunity for startups. And I just wonder, where did that interest come from to being the person to, raise their hand and start planning these happy hours with Bayou City startups?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So I first off have to give credit to the OG, which is Joey Sanchez with his Cup of Joey. So he was, I was, I started going to Cup of Joey, gosh, when it was still at Fenton Hall. So, there were like, I don't know, 10 of us showing up on a regular basis at that point. And this was actually while I was still at Capital Factory and I hadn't transitioned back into the founder seat yet. And then when I made that transition, I actually wanted to have a community that I could hang out with on a regular basis. So for me, I had, being the venture associate for Capital Factory here in the Houston area, I'd seen what the Houston ecosystem had to offer. There were events, there were happy hours, there were coffee, meetups, there were all these things. But everybody was, a lot of times they were hosted by somebody else, and you kind of had to be, on. Like it was not just a casual networking event usually. And I wanted that kind of consistent community where I could show up and like be like, guys, I just had the worst week or whatever, right? And just tell them, and it would also be people that were familiar with the space that I didn't have to explain what a startup is, that got where I was coming from and could commiserate or could lean in and help. And so that's where that started. And Joey was actually who was, the one who said, hey, you need to be doing it consistently. I took his advice a little too literally at first because I used to do these weekly and that was a mistake. I burnt out on that. And actually didn't do them at all last year because of that. So they've been reincarnated this year as a monthly thing. But yeah, it's been a good way to do it. And I guess maybe it's the founder in me that, you like you said, I saw that that it didn't exist and I was like, well, I'm just gonna do it then. And people responded, which was great. So yeah, that's it.
I think it's from an outsider perspective of like, navigating these weekly or monthly things in the community. Like, yes, there's Cup of Joey, which going to talk to a wider audience. Like, it's not necessarily just startup founders. And I think what you've kind of been intentional about doing with Bayou City Startups is like that camaraderie of startup founders. I think it's such a good point. So much of it is a lonely process. They're not like, maybe you have a founding team, but they're, maybe located all over, like, maybe just, in the Woodlands and you're in town kind of thing. Like, that could be me. So I think that's what's really interesting. This year, as you said, there's been a lot more structure and kind of intention. What do you see the future of this is? I know you've brought on some really great partners and sponsors, and Innovation Map was one of them. What do you see that? Where do you see this going?
Yeah, so that is definitely something I've been focusing on. At first, the first, first couple of months were all about building consistency. And then right now my focus has shifted to finding good partners for events. So, companies or organizations that are aligned with what we're trying to do, the audience we're trying to reach. Love to have folks come out and meet them, learn more about them, and again in like a low stress, very casual environment. And then we've also been asked by people in the community to start doing workshops. So that's something that we're very early stages of planning. So things like market sizing for founders, so predominantly founders. So looking at sizing of markets and evaluating your pitch decks, really things just very tactical kind of workshops. I have no time for some fluff workshop. I'm not going to spend my time planning it, and I'm not going to sit through it, and I'm not going to ask other people to sit through it. Founders are busy. Like, we don't have time for that kind of stuff. So if somebody shows up for one of these workshops, I want them to go home with something really tangible, either, a physical thing or like something they can go do, act on immediately. So that is something. And then I've also been thinking about ways to, kind of expand some of the other things we're doing, maybe some dinners or things like that. But that's still, like, again, very nebulous. So I don't have any specifics on that yet. But again, community. So always interested. If anybody has any ideas or suggestions, let me know, because I'm out there listening.
Yeah, I think depending on the month of the year, I feel like almost like there's been that sometimes it's like an absolute like it's chaotic just to plan your calendar, like what to attend, like navigating what's going to be worth my time as a founder, as investors, someone like tapping into the ecosystem. It's hard and it's overwhelming some months, and then other months it seems like everyone just disappears and there's nothing going on. So I think that's really cool to have this consistent opportunity to meet with some other people and in similar spaces across industries, which is something I think is unique because we have a lot of different types of industries in Houston,
Yes, we do.
and they overlap more than you would think when it comes to the technology in it. So I guess that being said, what I want to talk about, when's the next one? What should who should go? Who should make it a priority that they attend as many of these as possible?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Let me pull up my calendar just to double check I don't give you the wrong date. All right, so the next one is on Tuesday, July 18th from 5 to 7 p.m. Location is TBD. I'm trying to find a place with air conditioning this time. If you didn't make it out this last month, we did it at Bad Astronaut, and as Natalie can attest, it was quite hot. And unfortunately, Bad Astronaut has lots of fans, but didn't have the swamp coolers and things installed yet. So it was pretty warm. So one of my goals this month is to find a place that has both indoor and outdoor spaces, including with air conditioning. So again, if you have any suggestions, like, I'm all ears. And then just as a heads up to anybody who's like wondering about these events, as far as like where I pick to host these, we do a rotating location every month. I'm looking for places that have decent parking. I mean, some are better than others. It's Houston. That have a mix of beverage options. I don't want to just do like just beer, just liquor, or whatever, because everybody has different preferences. I always try to find a place that also offers mocktail or alcohol-free options, because there are people in our community that are just choosing not to drink for whatever reason. And we want to make sure they've got options as well. And then plenty of space. You know, we do get about, lately we've been getting about 50 people at this event. So we have to be cognizant. You know, some of these really cool bars are just too tiny for us at this point, which is a great problem to have. Yeah, so those are kind of the big things we're looking at. And obviously for summer, AC would be nice. So, as to who should show up, so really anybody that is involved in startups is welcome. You know, we are looking for founders, operators, funders, ecosystem builders. If you are working with startups, if you advise startups, like, come on down. Would love to see more angel investors showing up at these things. You don't have to tell people that you're an investor. You can keep it on the DL. So you don't get, you know, swarmed. But I will say one of the things that I think I should mention that I think is something that makes this unique is that we have a very strict don't sell to people policy at the events. So, you know, I tell people, if you want to talk shop, like if it comes up in conversation, like that's totally fine. But if you're coming in with a hard sell to somebody, that's not what we're here for. And we're, you know, this is, consider this your warning. Like, we're going to ask you to not do that and not come back if you're going to be obnoxious to people. So that is the vibe that we cultivate here. You know, it's a place to meet people. It's not a place to, you know, try to pitch all your stuff. So, you know, you can do that later. But this is about establishing relationships. So, anyway, so founders, funders, startup folks in the ecosystems, you know, we are also looking at, you know, if you are a super early stage founder, or we've also even had people that are really, they haven't even had a company yet, but they want to start one. So like we had a student from U of H come out and he's involved in their like startup and their entrepreneurship programs. That's great. Come on down. Like, that's fine. I mean, assuming you're, you know, of age to be at the bar, but, you know, we really want people that want to be involved some way in the startup system, and want to contribute to that ecosystem. So, hope that answered the question.
That, and just to go back to how you've developed the structure and consistency is, you know, 50 people showing up, that's a huge, I mean, obviously I'm saying this, I'm like, I saw the value and made Innovation Map be the sponsor of the last one, because I think it's just such an opportunity to reach in a very casual, networking friendly way to reach the founders of Houston. So definitely making a plug for you, so you don't even have to do it. Reach out if anyone's interested in partnering, and kind of being the presenting sponsor for each of these, because it's just such a great opportunity. Like, when do you get 50 people together these days? I feel like in this, just this like casual, friendly setting, I think it's cool. I guess zooming out a little bit on Bayou City Startups, what do your days look like? I know you've got a lot going on. You have wear a couple different hats. So tell me about your day to day.
Oh yeah. So I work from home predominantly, and so typically my day starts actually with me going to Orange Theory. I got into that like last year, and I go, you know, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You know, I go to the one in Sawyer Yard. So like, if y'all want to come join me, I go to the 8:15 class. Come on out. It's a lot of fun. I prioritize physical fitness because heart disease runs in my family. And I realized, you know, my father passed away when I turned 30, and I was like, holy crap, like he's only, you know, 21 years older than me, right? Like, that's not that long. So I needed to do something about this. So I guess partially that's part of my day, but also kind of a word to everybody else out there, like, make time for it, go do it. Build consistency into that routine. In general, that just helps, especially with like remote work, or like, you know, if you're doing multiple projects, like just building in consistency really helps. Anyway, so go work out. After that, I usually am taking client calls. So I do consulting for startups in terms of product, advising startups, working with them, You know, I do product work. I also do kind of, you know, like, hey, let's go over your pitch. So let's talk about, you know, your market. Let's talk about your go-to-market strategies, those kinds of things. So client calls during the day. And then I'm usually trying to log off around 6, if not 5 o'clock. Try to do, you know, not work super, super late. I'm past that point in my life. I've got a husband who, thank God, cooks really well, you know, and he's at the happy hours, so feel free to come talk to him about food. And then the dogs. Actually, it's my dogs that are the ones that keep me the most consistent, because Murphy, who also comes to happy hours usually if we're doing them in a dog-friendly location, Murphy got trained to know what time work ended. It's at 23andMe when he used to come to work with me. And so now, like around like 4:30, he's like starts pawing me and he's like, hey, it's time. It's time. Let's go outside. Let's go for a walk. And so I'm, you know, wrap up my day, you know, then, and then, you know, hang out with my husband, work on planning the next happy hour. Pretty flexible day to day. You know, that's one of the, I guess that's a good thing and a bad thing, not having like structured hours. But I did, you know, when I had the startup, it was a little bit more like I had to be on between certain hours of the day because that's when my team was available. Now it's, you know, kind of whenever my clients are need to talk. So.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, first of all, Murphy is my favorite. And I say that, and I've told you this so many times, but that I'm picky on dogs and I love he's a sweetie. Yeah, I think that resonates with a lot of startup founders who are maybe still juggling like a full-time and company, or maybe they've even transitioned to part-time with both entities. So I think that's a good reminder. And I think as a professional zigzagger, as you've and as Gordon described to you, what advice do you have for startup founders who are navigating that, you know, either in between or juggling? Obviously, you juggle a lot, but for founders who are juggling, what advice do you have for that?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I should be giving advice. I feel like you have to like figured things out. You know, in terms of, I guess for me, one thing I have found is like, if you are someone who's kind of done some context switching throughout your career, it can be confusing to employers when you're applying for jobs. Now, obviously, if you're a founder, that kind of circumvents that issue because it doesn't matter. You are your employer. But like if you are trying to find like at least part-time employment, you know, really focusing on how to communicate like what those experiences bring to the table and then leaving off experiences that maybe aren't relevant. So, for example, I don't always lead with the PhD because in tech, a lot of times, if I'm not applying to like a medical tech company or working with that, like that just confuses them and they don't really understand why I'm talking to them, right? So, you know, it's about kind of emphasizing the things that matter in the situation and then de-emphasizing the things that aren't as relevant. I think another big thing, if you're gonna, and if you're like in general, if you're doing a bunch of different things, juggling different balls, so to speak, is knowing what things to say no to, which is something I'm getting better at, because you can definitely overcommit yourself, and then you're, you know, gonna burn out, or you're gonna drop, you know, balls, and then you end up disappointing people, and that's, you know, not good. So I would say practice saying no, and maybe make that your default. No, and then okay, maybe you know, like because I think a lot of times founders tend to say yes first, and then it's like, oh, that was I shouldn't have done that. So.
Well, I think that's great advice. I mean, especially the leaving some non-relevant expertise off. I think that's like getting a job 101, is like you want to like lead with what's most relevant. And sometimes that just means maybe less where you worked and what you did and like what your skill set is and leading with. I think that's a great reminder. When you think about your career and being, you have the background at the bigger startups and also at the very early stage smaller startups and in the Bay Area and in Houston, what do you see for Houston and the state that our startups are in locally, what do you feel like we're doing right? And what do you feel like we maybe need to learn from other ecosystems?
Ooh. Okay, so Houston and the Bay Area could not be more different in a lot of ways. I will give them the credit. California has beautiful weather. Houston has better food, hands down. But in terms of the startup ecosystem, so, you know, we joked, my husband and I joked that everybody had a startup that we met in California. Like, literally, it didn't matter if they were working somewhere else, they had a startup. The product manager that I worked with had an app that he was building. Of course, it had nothing to do with 23andMe, but, you know, he was doing that. Like, everybody in our company, I mean, we had people leave 23andMe to go start other companies. Like, I mean, that's just, it just, it's like they're just sprouting off of everything. I would love to see more of that here in Houston. But I think, you know, things we do well here in Houston are, our founders are super scrappy. They do so much with so little. You know, we just do not have the amount of capital floating around this ecosystem that you do if you're in SF, right? Like, you literally could be talking about your idea in a coffee shop in the Bay Area, and somebody is like, oh, I'm an angel investor, here's $20,000. You know, like, that sounds unreal, but that kind of stuff did happen out there. So, you know, would love to see more of that here too. But, you know, our founders are not necessarily having money thrown at them. And so they have to figure it out. So we've got people that are, you know, working and are building their stuff on the weekends or in the evenings. They're getting customers and making money, which is like a thing that they don't necessarily do in the Bay. Although now they're starting to realize the wisdom in profitable startups, considering the ecosystem, the economic climate. But, you know, that's something I think our founders do really well. Something I think the Houston area could do better about is being more collaborative. We have a lot of silos in the ecosystem that are, I think, mostly artificial. Some of them are, you know, historical remnants from the startup develop, you know, the ecosystem development. Some of it is industry, you know, different industries not really mixing with the other industries. Like, I think every founder, it doesn't matter what industry you're in, there's things that you can learn and lean on other founders from completely different industries. With, you know, like, everybody has to do hiring. Everybody has to go through fundraising. Everybody, I mean, that goes the venture route. Not everybody does fundraising, obviously, if you're bootstrapped. Sorry, I'm not trying to say that you should or should not go through fundraising. Bootstrapping is 100% a legitimate way to build a business also. But, you know, there's like commonalities there. You know, everybody has to deal with legal at some point, right? Like, so there's things that you can benefit from talking to other founders. And then also just that I do want to take a second, we haven't really talked about this yet, is to address the psychological aspects of being a founder of a tech startup or of a biotech startup or a med tech startup or a green tech startup, right? Whatever. It is sometimes a very lonely, isolating experience, even if you have a team. You have, you know, all this pressure on you. You may have your co-founders if you have a co-founding team. You may not if you're a solo founder. But even if you do have a team, it can be still like you're the gal, you're the guy, right? Like, it's all on you. A lot of that pressure is on your shoulders. And it's nice to have that community of other founders that you can talk to about the stuff that you're dealing with. So another plug for coming to happy hours, because there's lots of us there. But yeah, so I think breaking down those silos and really getting the community to mix together more is something that Houston, I just only see positives from that happening. You know, there's synergies that happen. when med tech devices meet up with climate tech. I mean, it's like pumps and pipes, right? Like at the Ion, they do this exact for this exact reason. There's similar things. There's things that you can take from different industries that create these crazy synergies that can only happen here in Houston, because of the mix of these industries being so close in proximity to each other, these founders like literally being neighbors. So I would love to see more of that. And then the final thing I will say that I would love to see more of is more early stage investing, more angels. And I think as an ecosystem, this is a call to our ecosystem, we need to do better about helping people who aren't already angel investing or who are new to angel investing, learn how to do that and learn how to source deals and how to due diligence and how to feel comfortable investing, especially outside of their own wheelhouse, right? We have a lot of investors, a lot of people who could be investors who made their money in real estate, who made their money in oil and gas, and they may feel comfortable investing in those sectors. How do we get them to invest in sectors outside of that? Because we do have tech founders in all kinds of areas. We have people doing logistics. We have people doing healthcare. We have people doing retail. We have people doing e-commerce. We have a huge CPG community here, which was actually a surprise to me because I thought that they were all in Austin. And it turns out we actually have quite a lot of CPG founders here in Houston that are selling in HEB. Like, to me, I was like, holy moly, that's huge. Shout out to that community. But we have a lack of funding in the ecosystem that is driving our founders to leave Houston and go to Boston or the Bay or New York or whatever to seek that funding. So let's keep them in-house. Let's bring it here and let's help those investors figure out how to invest locally.
Yeah, I think that was a lot that you covered in one. I appreciate
Sorry.
the laundry list of things, though. I think it's so great. But I kind of just to maybe zero in on one, and something you mentioned already, like the state of investment is very, I don't know, weird is like the only word. Describe it in 2023. I think it's just been a weird year for VC investment, and it's obviously affected Houston, but I think something you said about Houston having like scrappier founders and bootstrapped founders. What do you think that positions for us? Are we still just as struggling as other ecosystems, or because we've notoriously and historically been scrappy as a startup community, are we at an advantage in that way?
Well, yeah, yes and no. So I would say that we do have a lot of founders that have either foregone the investment route entirely or have figured out how to get by on less, by becoming profit generating. And I think that is a benefit, obviously. And it also think makes them more attractive to investors right now because investors are actually looking at businesses and saying, oh, hey, this one's actually making revenue. Like, that's great. Let's put more money there. Versus, the consumer companies that we're going to grow a billion user base but never be able to monetize. But I do want to acknowledge that for the founders that are raising right now, it is very hard. And I think in some ways, like because the Houston investment ecosystem is still pretty new or young, not new, young, less developed than other places, one of the consequences of that is that our founders are less well networked with investors in general. So like they don't know as many investors, that they can reach out to. So like it just makes the whole process harder. So it's harder to raise in general, like across the board for everybody. And then it's even harder because we don't have that network built up here for those founders to even like be able to tap in to figure out who is actually writing checks and then get in front of them and be able to pitch their businesses. So in some ways it's a benefit, right? Like we do have this scrappy mentality that's making the businesses that are profitable are doing better. But for the founders that are raising, there's still a challenge to be had.
Yeah, I feel like it's a great reminder, and acknowledgement of the extra challenges of being a Houston founder. And I think it's also like kind of, I feel like the success stories we do see in Houston startups are, it almost feels like they're the exception, not the rule. I don't know if you have advice for startup founders who are navigating the local ecosystem, and I guess mainly maybe even how to network outside of Houston, because that's been the success of Houston startups, is that they found funding outside of Houston, because as you observed, we just have not as many investors in Houston. So what's the best way to do that these days as a founder to find potential investors?
You know, so VC is very relationship driven business. So I think one thing that founders can do is to network with other founders, and then ask those founders for introductions to their investors. You know, obviously you're probably going to be looking at networking with founders outside of the Houston area, but that's, I think, a little bit easier than just like cold calling a, you know, an investor. You can obviously send cold emails to investors. When I do counsel founders when they're doing this, make sure you research the firm, the investor themselves, like what kind of companies are they investing in? Are you the right size? Are you the right stage? All that kind of stuff before you even send the email, because otherwise you're just wasting everybody's time. But you know, cold outreach does still work. And then, you know, there are events that, you know, are happening in other ecosystems where you can, you know, mix and mingle with some of these folks. But I think, you know, I would say that just like trying to meet as many people in the ecosystems outside of the Houston area. I mean, people within the ecosystems here, I think, are great about opening up their Rolodex for people that are nice and, you know, have like good ideas. So ask, I guess that's like the key here, is to ask for the intro. I think a lot of people don't do that. They don't think to do that. And you can just say like, hey, I'm looking for, I've had people say, hey, I'm looking for LPs. Can you help me? Do you know anybody that might be an LP? And then it's, I think like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe I can introduce you to this person. But it's not something that I would have thought to say, hey, are you looking for LPs? You know, like, but they asked. And so then I was like, oh, right. So asking for that introduction, I think, is always maybe the best thing to do. And then there are, you know, there are founder ecosystems out there. So for example, like I'm in a community called Everything Marketplaces. That is, so anybody that's in the marketplace space, I recommend that community to them, because it's a lot of marketplace founders and operators. And then there's also investors that hang out in those communities too. So there's communities like On Deck, there's, you know, there's Everything Marketplaces. I don't know what they all are, but there's a bunch of them out there. So like, find the one that's in your niche, or one that's a good fit for you, and get involved there. Talk to those founders, ask them for, you know, their introductions to their investors. If they have like, you know, I wouldn't just say, hey, can you introduce me to all your investors? Like, if you can kind of get a feel for who their investors are and ask them for a specific one, that's better than just like a blanket statement. But yeah, that's, I think that would be my advice.
I think that's, it's great advice and a good context, because obviously you said earlier, like networking and both in and out of Houston. So obviously we checked off the box for recommendations for networking in Houston. It's to go to your happy hours. But now, yeah, to reach a broader audience, the internet's magical in that way. Like there's so many ways to reach people and find those lasting connections, even if you've never met the person in person. I think much more used to that these days. And a good reminder always that, you know, VC relationships are relationships, and they take time to form, and you can't just go in there with your hand out.
Yeah, not very successful.
And so, like, I do feel like our conversation has come full circle with this kind of importance of networking. But I guess one of my favorite questions to usually wrap up on is to ask, you know, what keeps you up at night. But like, I think I'm going to rephrase it for you, because you kind of explained how your through line is like following your curiosity and your interests. So what's been something you've been curious about these days? What's something that's kind of occupied like a space in your brain on a regular basis, and I guess, a pretty significant way.
For me, it actually has been, interestingly, like a bunch of, I've been most interested in like functional health, you know, and health optimization. I'm definitely not the, like that dude that is injecting his son's blood into him. I'm not that, I'm never going to have an 18-year-old's body again. And I'm perfectly okay with that. But I have, you know, like my friends and I, we listen to like Andrew Huberman and Peter Attia and guys like that. And they're, and Sarah Gottfried, and they're talking about hormones and taking care of yourself. I think this is like a trend right now in the startup space too, because a lot of founders seem to be thinking about the same thing. So it's, you know, how can I live healthy now, and then continue to like be healthy as I age? You know, I'm mid 30s, so, you know, I don't want to become like a decrepit old, you know, person who can't lift her suitcase up, because then there's no point in traveling, you know. Like, I want to be able to put it on the overhead bin until I'm dead. So that's been the thing that's been kind of occupying my space. We haven't done a great job studying like women's health and hormone systems. Medical industry has treated women as if we're little men for a long time, and we're not. Our bodies are different, and you know, we respond to different medications and different protocols differently. So that's been something I've been thinking about. How can we do better at servicing, you know, women's health? And then how can I like live better, healthier in general? So yeah.
I don't want to minimize, but like, I relate so much, and I make the joke all, I'm like just constantly contemplating my own mortality, which is extremely but like it's I feel that as like a joke, but because really it's exactly in line with what you're saying of like, yeah, like we're living longer as humans and as women. You know, we've always on average outlived men, but yeah, it's like we need to then look at extending the quality and the functionality of that life rather than just writing off the last 10, 15 years of our life as a loss. Cause like, it's so great that we have those years, but how do we make the most of them? So I love that.
For sure. Yeah. I definitely could not imagine just like retiring. This is never going to happen. I would never like retiring and then just like sitting on the couch watching soap operas all day. Like, no, I would rather just shuffle off a mortal coil before that happens.
I think I'm in agreement too. So that was very interesting. I'm glad I asked you that question of where your curiosity and interest is leading you lately. So thank you for indulging that question and for sharing so much about what you're doing and the importance of networking really in this conversation. So thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.